둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Confusing technology.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Hey, thanks as always for making your way here. Checking out the series, please hit the subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, sometimes even more than that. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. All the usual spots, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFBK.org, Red Circle, Audible, YouTube for the video versions. Obviously, wherever you're listening from right now. Anywhere you get your podcast from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today catching up with my good buddy Gavin Rosdell of Bush. We're going to be talking about the new record, The Art of Survival, why it ended up being one of Bush's heaviest albums so far. We'll do some compare and contrast to bands like Coldplay and the Mars Volta. Leonard Cohen is a big hero for both of us. I'll ask about Gavin's penchant for religious iconography in his lyrics, and being a reader of folks like Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins. Gavin's also going to talk about his hopes of being in the just-announced Constantine II. If you remember, he was in the original version, and why he says Nicolas Cage is the best actor in the world. It's all that and more. It's Kyle Meredith with Gavin Rosdell of Bush.
Hey, how are you? We're like an annual event. We are an We're keeping it annual. I like it. Consistency is everything. My manager, if I want to play stadiums, just be consistent. I was like, okay.
Well, then if I'm in any way helping you play stadiums, I'm all for it. I don't know if that's consistency that your manager's talking about, but happy to be a part of any kind of routine here. And man, you got to near the record. And I think I compliment you every single time. The Art of Survival, this is a big record. This is a loud record. It's a powerful record. To me, at times, it feels like maybe one of the heaviest records that you've put out. Does it come across like that to you?
Yeah, I'm finally sort of honing my aesthetic down to where I want to be. I'm the sharp knife I always wanted to be. Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I think these last few years, and I was noticing that every time we play big shows, big bands and big guitar bands and heavy rock festivals, metal festivals, wherever, I was always relying on the heavier elements of each album to for the set list, you know, just to fuck people up, you know, in a good way. And then I did the Institute record in, was it 2005, that I really loved, and I was always annoyed it was not a Bush record. And so since The Kingdom, when I did The Kingdom, you know, I basically did Black and White Rainbows, which is my sort of bruised post-divorce apocalyptic record of like coming back to breathe life on a scorched earth. And I inevitably had a sort of a more injured side, took a more vulnerable side. And And then I was just annoyed. And so I did the Kingdom. And then the Kingdom seemed to have the right spirit. And then I, you know, for so many records in as a band, just didn't want to have a mediocre, mid-tempo, acoustic-led, this is the real meaning bullshit. I just wanted it to be like devastating and fierce and be like, what? People are like, what is this? This is, you know, I'd rather go down in flames than to sort of peter out in some sort of like, you know, a dimmer switch. You know, so that's it. This is my incendiary instinct.
It's interesting how you put it all together too. Like, you know, we've talked about a lot of our mutual heroes before, you know, whether it's Bowie over my shoulder, you know, Leonard Cohen and et cetera, et cetera. But to take what you do lyrically, maybe sometimes with them in mind and put it on top of something this, you know, this heavy, this crunchy, what's the marriage of that? I mean, is there a trick?
I mean, you know, there's no one more powerful than, you can never be more powerful than being yourself. And as I've gone through my career, I've just honed it to a degree who I want to be and what I'm inspired by. And so, yeah, Leonard Cohen, you know, massive, just these incredible words. And so for me, I just don't know why, but I'm screwed because I gave my life to guitars and to rock music, right? In a world where people care less and less, allegedly, about rock music. So I have to find how to be interesting to someone that doesn't know or care about me, or, you know, and I see every record as a chance to redefine, reconnect, introduce yourself to people, you know. So my whole MO is reduced. I'm like a handmade noodle artisan, you know. I just devoted myself. So if I'm gonna make rock music, if I play standard music, you know, standard guitar tuning, just feels vanilla and lost, and it doesn't turn me on, unless I play some people's great songs on there, then of course it does. But I just, something about the detuned world, Russia mentioned from Institute, or the heavier songs I like, it opened up something that I hadn't you know, kind of embraced as much before, and I found it liberating, and I'm just interested in people just having an amazing time when they listen to us, and that kind of massive crowd head bopping movement. And that doesn't come from anything but sort of, well, it comes from doing what I'm doing. And there are people, you know, with someone like, you know, Coldplay, who, you know, I love Chris, and we've come up together, and he's just forged a life of incredible musicianship, great songwriting, and pop music, and he plays to stadiums. Massive. And ironically, when I had my sort of softest moment, you could say, on my solo record, Inscope were kind of turned on by it, and were like, maybe thought I could do a sort of a, you know, a solo career, wanted to do another record. But I just felt like it wasn't for me. And I just love guitars. I love the performance that goes with them. And I feel at home and at one. And so I forfeit a massive career because I've stayed in rock music. It's dwindling. Everyone's leaving the building. Oh, look, I painted a new room. No one gives a shit. Well, but look at this. I've done a gallery. So now I've done a really good open, you know, open brick sort of huge loft experience of music. And it just excites me. And the best part is when I play to anyone on a personal level, they're like, wow, you know, just... what is this shape you're asking me to hold? Why are you doing this? Are you not, you know, should be kind of going the other way. So I like it for that, because it's, on one hand, it's all wrong and it's all crazy, but it's so much attitude and so much energy and fire that it's just, if you're going to stick around and be annoying as long as we have, you might as well make sense of it. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Oh, great. Here's another mid-tempo ballady song. No. So I like it when people go, oh my God, what is this? It's such a much better reaction.
I always say, you know, you close the record with a thousand years. I mean, that, as far as it closes the ballad we get for this record, and it's absolutely a beautiful moment. For what it's worth.
I love those moments. And it's not like I'm betraying them. When I had wrote about four or five mellow songs that, you know, we put two on there. And I just think it's an essential respite. And I love that. Every record we've ever done, I always have that. And I'm just sort of held back, you know, because I just know that you can't put four on there, or else you sort of, you know, become sort of more Elliot Smith-like, which would be beautiful because he was incredible, but not what gets people talking to me enough. You know, I don't know. I mean, I could have put more on there and they'd be like, wow, so it's a real kind of low downbeat record. I saw the Mars Volta is kind of quite a mellow record as well. That's interesting. I love that band. And I was listening through that record yesterday a lot. And I was like, wow, they just were like, they've got a, I just hear so much in this beautiful record. Beautiful.
I almost call it their yacht rock record, almost. Like it's, if Mars Volta did a yacht record, like this would probably be it.
That's a good one. That's a good one. They deserve it. But I mean, you know, from coming from At the Drive-In, which was so incendiary, to then at the beginning of the Mars Volta, when it was really that sort of, you know, Sun Ra progressive. I don't know what the fuck that was. It just was like, holy shit, this is like a different journey. To this, I was waiting for that to come. I was waiting to be sort of the assault, and the assault never came. As you say, I was just like lapping up the waves. It's a brilliant description of it, because it's a luxury yacht. Yeah.
It is a luxury yacht. Our favorite artists do this, you know, and that's why we love them.
Well, like it's like Neil Young, he did that his whole career, right? It's sort of, you know, go from the big records into the mellow records and sort of be the promotion team nightmare at Elektra. You're like, oh my god, he's, you know, now he's something else. But it didn't hurt him, did it?
And if they bugged him too much, he wrote "This One's for You." You know, it's don't get on his bad side. And we'll be right back right after this.
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Gavin Rosdell of Bush. You didn't sacrifice anything on this record. And I mean that in the absolute compliment way. I mean, because you have the heavy record, but these lyrics, they're still, you know, telling important stories, telling important moments, whether it's, you know, that first single with More Than Machines. I mean, here we have, I think as you've explained it, you've like, I think any other artist, this would have been all over the map, because you fit in women's rights, you fit in climate change, you fit in AI, all in one song. What's the story you wanted to tell ultimately with this one?
With this whole record?
With that song specifically, I should say.
With that song specifically, it was one of the very last songs I wrote, as it always happens. You know, annoyingly, you get that sort of, the label say, do us more songs. You're like, oh, fuck you, fuck. And then that's your ego. And then you're like, well, maybe we could... And it just, that whole Roe versus Wade had been that has been decided a few weeks earlier, a month. And it just, you know, I have a daughter, you know, I was raised by my aunt, you know, I've had strong, brilliant women around me. I've been lucky enough to be in relationships with strong women. Just felt such an assault and such a bizarre step in a world where we're trying to elevate everyone's rights. It just was like, it still doesn't actually make sense to me. So I was so proud to be able to, you know, with me, it's never about me being like didactic, like a lecturing, because I can't tell people how to think. You know, I'm a mass of contradictions and a mass of insufficiencies and all, you know, I mean, I'm just a perfectly really human person and full of good and bad. And like, it's just like, it's more like saying, should we be keeping our mind on this? And what happens is that traditionally in a situation like this, nothing's going to be more powerful than girls and people revolting against this and voting accordingly. And maybe it isn't going to be as powerful as if we just sat quiet and sort of, so many things happen in our world that are beyond our control. And we're such lousy puppets, you know. You know, there's a war, so I'm sorry, gas is going to be really expensive and you're all fucked, even though you probably fucked and probably lost a lot of money. We're really sorry, but look at this. Look at the fight that's going on, this war. So we'll put prices up. Cut to, oh, also, fantastic. BP and Shell announced record profits, $8.8 trillion exit. Well, fuck me. Why did you need to make profits this year? Why don't you make enough out of us consistently? It's just, we have no power. So some of the powers we have would be to actually, in a democracy, vote some. That's the most power we can have. So it's just, that's what I mean. And let's not be sort of blindsided by this big business. So that's it, you know.
Well, it's a great song.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's very, we've spoken a lot. I've referenced so many things throughout my career, but always been really careful to not be a pushing. It's not a political platform for me. It's a social platform. And I just get to say what I think, but more just not, I don't say what I think. It's like what bothers me. I mean, when I wrote Bomb on 16 Stone about the guy gets blown up because of the IRA Protestant bombing in London when I was a kid, it's not saying one person's right, one person's wrong. It's just saying, Jesus Christ, this is happening and this human situation, look how it affects us personally. My job is much more personal. It's not a, I'm not looking to run for any office. Except the office of a great time. The office of a great time.
But you know, human sand, I mean, because that kind of brings up the climate change thing again. I mean, and it's obviously, if it's not on people's minds, I'm sort of flabbergasted by that, because it absolutely should be. And it's not a question here, it's just kind of complimenting you how you do work it in, because you're right, it doesn't sound like you're up at the pulpit, you know, or you know, right, trying to, but
I,
there
I
it
love
is.
That one of my favorite lines in that one is that I believe in terrestrial angels, I believe in the power of one, you know. It's just self, it's just responsibility and empathy and a sort of a connection to others. And you know, it's like I can't help it, and it used to piss Gwen off so much, which I'm delighted about, would be like the use of, you know, words that have been deemed to come from a religious background, sin, angels, devils, and it's all, but it's such rich, beautiful language, you know. It's the Bible is an incredible book, you know, an incredible work of words. And I think that the terrestrial angels is just, that's me at my best, you know. That's when I go, okay, it's cool, it's a cool life, you know, because terrestrial angels is where it's at. How what are we going to do if we don't have terrestrial angels? What are we going to do? Because it's such a selfish, you know. And heavy as the ocean, is that line, your brave, this bravery will save the world a bit. It's like the complete acknowledgement that we're doomed and it's fucked. But every incremental step that we take in individually to help each other is a sort of is what makes community. And then people talk about this, like this sense of your community. Well, your community is just like to create a sort of a like-minded set of people, so that we all have shared values, so that we all live with some degree of empathy and kindness, and not simply out for ourselves at the expense of others, which is, of course, how the world is run.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
the angels and demons, it's interesting, because, you know, the other side of your life, your career, with the acting and everything, and they just announced Constantine 2, and we've talked about it. You've talked for years like this should happen. You've been saying this sequel should happen for years. I just went back and rewatched it, and God, what a good movie that is. But I went back even further because I started thinking about the Greedy Fly video, and there was so many similarities that you were doing even a decade before with Constantine, and how this, as you were kind of talking about, kind of religious iconography sort of plays into your art. I mean, it's always been there, and it's so powerful when you do that.
You know, it's funny because I went, for example, I went to a school in England. I sang Latin hymns every day, 6 days a week. My every day would start in a church, beautiful church. Now, I was often late and, you know, not paying attention and snap, but I often think that my, you know, I don't know why I have an intrinsic connection to melody. Do you know what I mean? From when I began, you know, when I first wrote songs, I just would sing melodies in a phone like an idiot and get the band that's playing with to put chords under it. I didn't know anything. And I think that ironically, even though I'm an atheist, there's my history, in my DNA. Hymns are in my DNA. Musical cadence, my musical cadence came from hymns. Undoubtedly, there's no two ways about it. And some of them in Latin. Do you know what I mean? And then, of course, all the great, you know, there's all those fantastic hymns that are incredible. Jerusalem. I don't know if you know those in America, if there are American hymns you sing in American churches. But, you know, things like Jerusalem, it's just, they're rousing songs, beautiful. And I do love churches for their sort of, this sort of solemnity and their sort of devotion and their, you know, stripping away. They're supposed to be stripping away from your ego and just thinking of the power of good and good behavior and good values. I sort of appreciate that. I always thought it's interesting because I was a huge Christopher Hitchens, Roger Dawkins kind of fan, specifically for Christopher Hitchens. And I was offended by the idea that you can't have a moral structure without religion, because yes, you can. It's just incorrect. You know, there's no vocation in life. People think of people, they don't have God, you don't have a vocation. It's just untrue. The best word for it is untrue, because I'm living embodiment of that. See, there you go, embodiment. There's probably a religious word, and everyone is like annoyed I'm using it. If you don't believe that word, but it's a word. It's a word. And this society now, this whole, you know, word manipulations, I don't like it. I like free speech. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't understand it. And I don't like it. I support everyone, but I want everyone to leave language alone. Beautiful. Language is incredible.
Well, you do some great poetry with it. And I'll agree with you on all that. I was an altar boy when I was younger. I've known people that go to church all their life that are horrible people, and people that have never gone to church that are really good people. I know we're running up against the clock, and I do want to ask really quick, because I brought up Constantine too, and that's just too juicy right there, because you have been talking about it a while. Do you see more life for Balthazar? Is it possible?
Oh man, I'm going to run back to LA, and I'm going to find Akiva, who's writing it. I'm gonna find Francis, who's directing it, and just simply pledge allegiance. And like, I just want to do it, want to be part of it so bad. And it's just gonna be a case of whether they deem me relevant in there. You know, it's just like I don't know what I'm gonna have to do. If you have any suggestions as to how you think, but I don't know. It's gotta be. You know, people always talk about I'm English, right? So we're not really that pushy. And that sometimes, you know, you hear these great stories about people who are like, you know, and they went to the director's house and they went on their knees and they just said, I got to have this part. I got to have that. I remember, going to see Chris Melandrani about a movie, and he does the music. You know, he's part of the, there's Pixar, or is it Pixar? Incredible, you know, Despicable Me. He's incredible, the most talented man. I remember going to see him about doing music for him or whatever. And he goes, you know, Pharrell called me up and said, I've got to do this music. Of course, he did an incredible job for him. And I was thinking to myself, but you let him, you know, like, you let him do it. Like, if what if I sat in his office now and jumped on the table, like, you gotta let me do your next project. Is that really gonna fucking help, you know? So it's just, I don't quite know how to get that right, how people force themselves and yet get the job. I mean, look at that incredible Nicolas Cage, the unbearable weight of talent. Oh my God, when he is pushing for the jobs and he's auditioning, oh, like, it's a masterclass in acting. I mean, Nick Cage is the best actor in the world. He's the best actor. I don't know who could pull off that movie and those speeches and that intensity. He's a master. In fact, I should go see him and then get him to help me approach Francis and Akiva.
I believe in you. I really do. Just and plus, you know, Keanu, just hit him up too. He's got Dogstar back together. Not only do you do the movie together, then you do the tour together. And us fans, us greedy ass fans, we have the whole world at that point.
Dogstar back together.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been practicing.
The world's famous, most famous bass player.
It'd be a whole thing. That would be a, no, I seriously, I would love to see you back in there. That was such a fun trip.
I have every intention of giving it my best shot.
Yeah. In the meantime, of course, you got this record. I'll wrap this up. The Art of Survival is so damn good. I love what you do every single time. Gavin, it's always such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much. Likewise. All the best.
And my thanks to Gavin Rosdell. Again, the brand new Bush album is called The Art of Survival. We've spoken many times, as we alluded to in this interview. In fact, I think it's 3 or 4 times in the past 3 or 4 years. You can find all of those interviews further in this podcast if you search Kyle Meredith with Gavin Rosdell or Bush. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. As always, please do hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. You get 3 brand new interviews every week. You music nerd, I give you as much as you can take. And then I try to give you even more than that. So hit that subscribe button. New episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, Audible, Red Circle. Let's see, WFBK.org, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. An hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. I'm also on the social media spots, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All 3 of them, the address is at Kyle Meredith, except no substitutes. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
No one told me it would be easy.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.